when you want something, it's hard. And it doesn't always go the way that you want it to. But ultimately, the value of really chasing after something that's important to you kind of transcends all of that.
I am super excited to have my buddy Rich Roll on the podcast with me today. We first taped a conversation, it's probably like almost 5 years back when we were filming the original video series for Good Life Project. And it was a really big deep dive into his personal journey from overweight, 50-pound overweight, alcoholic, miserable, unhappy, unhealthy attorney at the time to a profound physical transformation, and where he actually became sort of an ultra endurance elite athlete that led to a book called Finding Ultra, which is a really moving memoir. That memoir is actually out as a reissue with something like 100 new pages. It's almost like an entire new book. You can go check it out now. But I want to sit down with Rich because the story that hasn't been told really all that much is the story of what has happened since that book came out in the 6 years since the original. And that odyssey is maybe more compelling, more powerful, a bigger disruption than what came before it. I had Rich's wife, Julie Payette, on a little while back, which is another fantastic conversation. We'll link to both Rich's earlier one and Julie's. And I really wanted to dive into sort of Rich's experience of the last chunk of years. We cover so many different topics. He is beautifully open, transparent, and vulnerable. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good Life Project is brought to you by Understood Explains, a podcast that's like a beacon for parents navigating the special education system. Hosted by Juliana Urtube, a special education expert, this season is all about individualized education plans, or IEPs. Juliana breaks down complex topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP in a way that's easy to grasp. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains about the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, and I was struck by the balance of empathy and practical advice. It's not just about understanding the system. It's about empowering parents and caregivers to advocate for their children, which is just so important. So I've known a number of people who've had to literally scramble to figure out how to advocate for their kids when the system seemed to just make it so hard to get the support that they need and deserve. So if you're a parent navigating this world, or even just wondering if it's right for your family, I encourage you to give Understood Explains a listen. Search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. It's like having a roadmap for a journey you didn't expect, making it a little less daunting. And the last time we sat down together was got to be close to 5 years ago, right?
Yes, I did your Good Life Project before it was an audio podcast and you were on YouTube.
Oh, that's right. It was video.
We videoed it in some warehouse somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Some film space.
And I think that is the first time that I met you face to face. But I would say, and I would like to say that probably unbeknownst to you, that you have been a mentor from afar. For me, for quite some time, I started following your work back when you were just talking about writing.
Oh, no kidding.
You had a website. I can't remember
Tribal
what it was
author.
Called. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I would read your posts.
Funny.
And I had a couple friends that were onto your stuff. And I voraciously devoured your content back at that time. And that's when I was a practicing lawyer. And I was starting to think, I need out. How am I going to you know, jettison myself out of this career and figure something else out. I was just starting to think about that kind of stuff. And I was looking for people who had blazed that path ahead of me. And, you know, you were kind of at the forefront of that at that time.
Oh, that's wild.
Must have been 2002. I mean, we're going way back.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's so funny how things come full circle, right? Yeah. So, and it's funny now too, because now I'm sure a lot of people look at you as the guy who was, you know, like working in the law, miserable, ill, burned out, and being like, huh. Mm-hmm. So Rich figured something out. It seems like he's super fit. He's living a great life. He loves his wife. He's hanging out with his kids and he's building a whole cool new thing.
And it just happened like that.
Right. Does that weird you out at all?
It doesn't. Well, it weirds me out when I feel like a false narrative is being projected upon me, or that I'm being revered in a certain way that doesn't feel genuine. But I'm very aware of holding that space for certain people. And so when I do the podcast or the kind of content that I put out, I'm conscious of that, you know, because I want to walk in your footsteps and be a voice that can perhaps provide a little bit of guidance for those who are trying or are struggling with that. Because I think a lot of people are. I think it's an epidemic of our age. I think there is a gigantic percentage of our population and perhaps globally of people who are stuck in unfulfilling careers, who don't feel fulfilled, don't have that anchor, and are looking for something more purposeful.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And I think there's also a lot of smoke and mirrors.
A lot of that.
I think that's part of it. I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, we've been friends for a chunk of years now, and I've come to know you, I've come to know your wife, Julie. And one of the things that I find so compelling is the level of ease that you both have with telling the truth, even when things suck. And you have been through a gauntlet. You know, it's interesting. So if we go back to the time where, and by the way, if you want to know Rich's fuller backstory, we've got this, and we've got a phenomenal, you know, like we've got the whole tale told on a really great video series, and we'll be sure to link to that. I think it'd be interesting to kind of pick up when your last book came out. So you come out with this book, 2013-ish, right?
2012, spring of 2012.
Okay. Finding Ultra. And it essentially is kind of a, I guess you call it a memoir, right?
Yeah, it's fundamentally a memoir.
Right, about your journey from being in this really awful place to radically changing the way that you ate to reconnecting with movement. In a very past life, you were a competitive swimmer, and that sort of like that and running just kind of like it became your salvation to a certain extent. And then you took that, and instead of it being just a tool to kind of get you back to baseline, you become this ultra endurance or like elite high performance guy. And that book was kind of the journey to that. And I know there's the rest of that story. There's a refresh of that story, which is emerging into the world also. These 6 years between now and then, I mean, from the outside looking in, what looks to be huge change even from that moment. Do you feel that?
I feel it. It's that thing, I don't know if you've experienced this, where you've changed in certain fundamental ways, but because it's gradual, you don't notice it. And it only becomes evident when somebody else reflects it back to you and you're forced to kind of confront it in a way that is not obvious to you in the moment. But yeah, I would agree with that. I think the last 6 years, I've seen perhaps more change than the change that's described in that book. And a lot of that is, you know, I speak about it, but some of that is untold and some of it is more dramatic than going from alcoholic to ultra endurance athlete. I think the struggles that I faced and the obstacles that I faced and ultimately, you know, continue to face and have overcome some are things that are probably more relatable to the average human being. I mean, in the wake of that book coming out, I was still a practicing lawyer. The date the book was released, I said, I'm no more, I'm not going to be a lawyer anymore. And I wasn't really, to be honest, I wasn't really practicing very much at that time anyway. I was slowly kind of sliding out of it, but I allowed my bar membership dues to lapse and I'm like, it's official.
Man, I remember when I did that. That was not
it's
easy.
It's scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary because I was very aware that book, you know, I was sort of an unknown human being at that point. but it presented an opportunity to catalyze even further transformation professionally and personally, but only to the extent that I was willing to kind of invest in getting that story out there. And so I was very determined to use that as a launch pad. And so many of the changes that I experienced that are described in that book are premised upon like having a true north and working hard and having faith that the universe will ultimately conspire to support you in that pursuit if your heart is true. And I had no reason to believe that that wouldn't continue to be the case, but the universe had other plans. And in the wake of that book coming out, I was sort of and pushing it out in the world diligently. I was like, okay, so now here's where these opportunities are going to come about that are going to allow me to support my family. I have four kids. And the phone just wasn't ringing. And money was getting super tight. And we went through a really difficult financial time. Julie calls it our dismantling. We almost lost our home. I mean, and that's a two-hour saga in and of itself to just describe. We had cars repossessed. You know, I think the nadir might have been when we couldn't, I can't remember if Julie told you this story, but we couldn't even pay for our garbage pickup. And so I remember when waste management came and picked up our bins and took them away. And the bill was like $60 or something like that, you know. And so then we had to put our garbage in the back of the one beat up old minivan that we had and find an empty dumpster somewhere to put that stuff. And meanwhile, you know, there's press being written about me in this book. And it was this bizarre, disorienting juxtaposition of having this ascending profile at the same time when we were struggling in a very, you know, in a very real way and really questioning, like, is this insane? You know, how are we going to see our way through this? There was no roadmap. There were mentors like yourself out in the world that I was, you know, investing in following and trying to practice the tools and the resources that were readily available to me. But my faith was tested in a huge way. And there were many times where I thought, I'm going to go back and work in a law firm. And it was Julie who's like, no, the only way out is through. Like, you cannot go backwards. We will figure this out, but you have to stay true to that true north that you set for yourself. And, you know, if you Google me or you read some story about me, it looks like it's all roses and it just kind of happened. But it was many years of trying to figure out how to take these ideas that meant so much to me, the experiences that I've had, and translate them into something that could be digestible for human beings while also being financially responsible.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an interesting place to be in, right? Especially because the book did really well. Yeah, the book continues to sell. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing this one thing, you know, which kind of like is telling your story of your ascendancy. And people are rallying around it. And like you say, like other media want to tell the story of it. And also, you know, physically, you're this specimen of it, you know, like absolute optimal peak fitness and health and the ability to make this really big, dramatic, disruptive change. And you're also, I know you and Julie, you're spiritual people. You know, like you dive into something and there is this belief that if we are fiercely aligned that, you know, we will be provided for. And yet sometimes it just doesn't happen. Or sometimes it doesn't happen on the time frame.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
That you need it to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, it doesn't happen the way that you right. want it to happen, would like it to happen, and certainly not on your own time frame, for sure.
Were you both on the same page about how to handle that window?
Julie was much stronger about it. Like she never wavered, and her steadfastness, her firm constitution was really an anchor for me. I think left to my own devices, I would have spun out of control. And it was her center of gravity that allowed me to continue to move forward with, you know, some semblance of grace throughout it all.
Yeah, I know, because my wife and I have talked about you guys actually. And we had this conversation of like, you know, like there are windows, even when you're succeeding, even when you're building a business or a company or a venture, I have never met the person where it's just been this smooth trajectory up and things just, you know, they started okay and they got a little better, a little better. It doesn't work like that. You know, even if you're very successful, you're going to have like a big spike up And then you're going to have your like dark night of the soul. And then you're going to spike higher, hopefully. And you're going to have yet another trough of sorrow. And then, and when you're younger, it's one thing to go through that. Because you kind of like, you're like, right, what do I have to lose? My ego, like a couple of bucks, I'll be okay. But when you hit a point in your life where you're like, okay, so we're a family. We've got a home, got like kids, got, I think it makes it so much harder.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. And as a, you know, as a man, like a quote unquote, like head of household, like, and all the baggage that comes with that.
Okay. So I know Julie's always been the head of your household.
Yes, I know. Let's be clear about that. That's very true. But my own ego getting in the way of thinking like, what, you know, what is my job as a husband and a father, as a provider, right? And that was really called into question. And looking at my kids and thinking, am I on some crazy ego trip? Like, what are the ramifications for this in terms of how this is going to impact my children? This can't be about me and my, you know, my journey. It has to be about us as a collective. And, you know, I'm sure that what we had to endure impacted my kids psychologically. And my daughters are too young to really be fully cognizant of it, but you know, we've had extensive conversations with our older boys who are now 23 and 22. And, you know, they were fully aware of what was going on. And they had to endure certain things that I wish they didn't have to. Today, they will tell you that those were valuable experiences because they saw two people committed to something that they loved and willing to fight for it. And as difficult as it was, in the aftermath of finally persevering and succeeding, there is a lesson for them, which is when you want something, it's hard and it doesn't always go the way that you want it to. But ultimately, the value of really chasing after something that's important to you kind of transcends all of that. And so, you know, it's not all roses, of course, but they will tell you that they learned a lot from that and that they consider it to be a net positive.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, just for them to know also, just because it's hard, that doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, because I think so much of us, when you have a vision of what you want it to be and it doesn't come quickly or easily, you're like, well, this must not be right then. To see, both for your kids and for you, right? And for anyone, for all of us, right? To go through a process where you're like, this just feels right, but it sucks and it's not happening. And like you want it to happen, it's causing pressure and stress. And then, but to stay with it, through all of that, and then to see it start to actually bear fruit. Like for me, one of the hugest lessons has always been just because it's really hard, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. Like it can be as right as ever, but that doesn't mean it, you know, the universe is just going to rise up and say, ta-da.
Yeah, no. And sometimes it is wrong, you know.
But that's that. So how do you distinguish that? I mean, because that's the classic.
I think you have to really be connected to yourself in a profound way. Like you have to have done that internal work where you really understand what is making you tick. So that dream or that goal or that passion that you have that you're trying so desperately to express is fundamentally the correct trajectory for you. I think if you're disconnected and you're just, I want to be a startup founder or whatever, you're just pulling out of the ether some idea that you saw somebody else chase and decide that that's for you without really investing in the internal work to understand what it is that, you know, drives you is the core thing, right?
For you then, what was your process and to really figure that out? Because, I mean, you were coming out of a world where your head was spinning. And it sounds like fitness and lifestyle nutrition were a way in, but that didn't necessarily reveal this is the essence of who I am and what drives me.
Yeah, I think it began with the feedback that I was receiving from the book and some of the press that I had done, where I was getting really profound emails from people who had connected with my story and were sharing with me very personal aspects of their own pain and process and journey, things that they wouldn't tell somebody on the street, perhaps even at times things that they hadn't told anybody. And I was so struck by that. And I think it was that experience of feeling connected to these people that I had never met before that gave me a sense that this was a path worthy of pursuing, that maybe, you know, despite my insecurities and self-doubts, that there was something about what I was doing that had value, and it gave me a sense of purpose and kind of girded my life with meaning in a way that I hadn't experienced before. And it drove me to find ways of providing helpful information to people in a way that could not just, you know, maybe get them through the day, but significantly impact how they think about their lives. And what that would look like, I didn't know. But I did know that the answers would come if I continued to do the things that had gotten me to that place and tried to stay grounded enough to pay attention to the signals that I was getting from the world around me. So beyond that, in terms of like tactics, I don't know that I had a strategy. It certainly wasn't a whiteboard situation of saying, this is what I'm going to do, and that's how it's going to break down.
And not even like getting to the what am I going to do part of it yet, which I do want to explore. But really, I think what my curiosity is more getting to the who am I and what matters to me and what gives me meaning, what drives me part of it. Like part of it was starting to actually see all this feedback from people, and you were responding to it in a way where like, wow, this is doing something to and for them, but it's also doing something to me. And and what's that telling me about, okay, so this, whatever it is, it feels good. I'm curious whether there was any more sort of deliberate process of self-inquiry around that.
That's a great question. I guess I would say that the self-inquiry process took the form of making sure that I continue to take care of myself physically and that I continue to invest in mindfulness practices and meditation that would deepen or quicken that connection with self so that I could be certain to the extent possible that my instincts as they arose within me could be reliable. That being said, that took place in the midst of a tremendous amount of confusion.
Right. And upheaval.
And upheaval. And as you know, like it's difficult to be creative and conscious when you're under financial pressure and you don't have a job. You know, I mean, these are, you know, real legitimate stressors. And so what happened was, you know, we were almost at our breaking point and unsure where our next paycheck was going to come from when an opportunity arose to go to Hawaii and work with a businessman there who was trying to develop a property and create like a community on this land that he had. And he offered to bring my whole family out to Kauai and pay us some money. And nobody else, I mean, the phone wasn't ringing. There was nothing going on. And it was like a lifeline. Like it really saved us. And it didn't really make sense. And I wasn't sure how it fit into the construct of what I was trying to achieve. But that's what showed up. And it showed up in a moment where we really needed it. And so in line with like paying attention to the cues of the universe, this was a yes, right? So we moved to the North Shore of Kauai. We're living in yurts on an organic farm. My kids are like, what is going on? You know, I'm like, I don't know.
Right. It's like yeah, from Malibu like, to yurts.
Yeah, it's like at the time, like I was pretty convinced that we were going to lose our home. And I was like, maybe we're just supposed to live in Hawaii. Like, you know, I didn't know. And after being there for a period of time, I started to get a little bit of island fever. I'd worked so hard to, you know, try to create the kernel of something. And then I felt like detached from humanity being on this island. I wanted to feel connected.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good Life Project is sponsored by Lexus GX. So have you ever owned something that inspired you to just up your game? For me, it was this high-end mountain bike. I love the ultralight frame, the suspension, the precision gearing, and I realized it deserved to be ridden to its full potential. So I started training harder so I could experience the joy it could give back to me. And it paid off. That bike helped me discover just new levels of performance and straight up joy. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Imagine tackling rugged landscapes with the available 33-inch all-terrain tires and multi-terrain select, then unwinding with the available front row massaging seats. This is a vehicle that inspires you to go further, to live up to its full potential. So why settle? Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Good Life Project is sponsored by NetSuite. So I remember when our businesses were just starting to really scale. It was amazing and also added complexity and stress. And the things that I used to do in hours were taking days, too many spreadsheets, too many systems, no single source of truth. If that sounds familiar, you should know these numbers. 37,000, 25, and 1. 37,000 businesses have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25. NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. And 1, because your business is one of a kind. So you get a customized solution for all of your key performance indicators in one efficient system with one source of truth, manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. Everything you need to grow all in one place. And right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/goodlife. That's netsuite.com/goodlife to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/goodlife.
And going back to Los Angeles wasn't an option in that moment. And that's when the idea of starting a podcast occurred. Because it was my way of trying to you know, reassemble that connection, at least virtually. And at the time, it wasn't a business plan or
right,
anything like that.
It was podcasting wasn't like, ooh, this is a fast track to money.
Yeah, no, this was
even today. It's not.
This was 2012.
Yeah, this is a passion project.
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't about generating income whatsoever. I mean, I wouldn't call myself an early adopter because podcasts have been around since, I don't know, 2006 or something like that. But I'd been a fan of the medium because I'd listened to tons of them when I was training out by myself preparing for these races. And that was at the time when it was super wonky. Like there was no app and you kind of had to download them through iTunes on your desktop and bump them to your MP3 player and all of that. But I loved the medium and although there were great shows at that time, there didn't seem to be all that much happening in the health space. And I thought, maybe I could contribute to this. And literally just took my sons, who are musicians, grabbed their microphones, and Julie and I just had a conversation. And I, from the minute we did it, I loved it. And I thought, let's do it again tomorrow, you know? And I think in retrospect, what I was doing was trying to continue the conversation that had begun with Finding Ultra, you know, which is a book about, as much as it's about, you know, my personal transformation, it's really about trying to find and bring expression to a more authentic version of yourself. And it's about human potential. And I wanted to use that template of podcasting to kind of explore other areas that perhaps I'd been blind to and continue my own education into self-development.
Yeah. And it sounds like it was your way to more publicly engage with those emails and those letters that you were getting and saying, let's continue this conversation. Let's make it bigger. Let's make it more public and see what comes of it.
Yeah. And you know, you said at the outset, that, you know, Julie and I have been sort of courageously truthful and honest about our journey. And that's really at the core of everything that I do. And it speaks to, you know, this issue of getting these emails and the you know, conversations that I've had with people. The honesty and the transparency comes from a desire to allow people to feel like it's okay if they're having a hard time, you know, that it's like permission, right? And it's almost like a breath of fresh air when you're talking about all the sort of, you know, shysters out there that are selling you programs that will transform your life in 30 days. That's not how it worked for me. You know, I know it's not how it worked for you. And I kind of wanted to inject a little bit of, you know, honesty into the experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process. So you start, it's funny. I didn't realize that's how your podcast, that was the origin of it.
In a warehouse that had the worst acoustics possible.
What was the early response to it? Because like you said, when you started doing this, the technology was pretty janky and the audience was the entire ecosystem of listeners was a fraction of the size.
Yeah, it's nothing like, it was not cool to have a podcast.
Right. But it's like you wouldn't introduce yourself as a podcaster.
No, not at that time. But I will say this, the one benefit of starting a podcast back then is that you could make an impact pretty quickly. So from the very first moment, it was like top three in the health section, you know, from the get-go. And I was able to establish an audience and do a little bit of a land grab that I think would be impossible to do now. So the response was favorable from the very first episode. And, you know, it wasn't that many people listening, but it was enough that it was showing up on iTunes in the new and noteworthy, and it was kind of, you know, up there in the rankings and in the top 100 immediately of all shows, because there just wasn't that much competition. And that was the encouragement that I needed to keep going at that time.
Right. But that doesn't solve your biggest pain point at that moment in time,
no,
which is you got a family, you're living in yurts in Hawaii, and you want to get back to like supporting and the mainland and all this stuff.
So the thing is, two things. It was something that I could do, right? When I didn't know what to do.
To give you a sense of agency.
A sense of agency. It was a creative outlet. And fundamentally beyond that, and perhaps most importantly, my experience has been when you're in that moment of confusion and you don't feel like you know what direction to turn, the best thing to do is to try to get out of your own egocentric problems and figure out a way to be of service to other people. That's always my answer. And if you can devote yourself to that path, ultimately, that's the way forward and the way out of whatever conundrum you find yourself in. And that's something I learned in sobriety. It's like a core fundamental principle of recovery.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of being of service also, I think a lot of people get tripped up because whatever area they're struggling in, they create an overlay that says, well, I haven't figured this out. I'm really struggling, AKA, I'm not worthy of sharing anything of value in any area. And what's interesting about you is like you had this area where you're really struggling. You hadn't figured it out. And it took even a chunk of time since then. But still, you knew that there was something that you could offer in one domain. Mm-hmm. And you just chose to say, let me focus on that domain and be of service. Even though there's other stuff that I haven't figured out and I'm not going to talk about, there's still some place where I can turn around and feel like I'm helping.
And also, sharing the struggle is your experience, right? And if you can get out of yourself and have the courage to share that, my experience has been that's what really connects with people. And I think the honesty to just say, I don't have this all figured out, but this is what I'm going through and I'm thinking about this or this, people like that, you know, because we all share that.
Yeah, I think people need it. And also, I mean, it's funny, there are a couple of Instagram accounts that I've seen recently that have exploded. They're huge, giant followings. And I was looking there, I was like, what's going on here? And it was people who consistently posted their struggle. They're consistently posted like their mad, anxious self-talk on a daily basis, their self-doubt, their self-criticism, their, oh my gosh, another day of this. Mm-hmm. and their accounts were exploding. Yeah, and often they're like with cute drawings or whatever it is like that. But fundamentally, it was the vulnerability of sharing, oh man, this is hard. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's like part of the value that you can offer is, okay, I've got some solutions, some ideas that might make you feel better or help you build your bit, whatever it is. But I think a lot of people really miss just the value in saying, not even saying, but just letting you know that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. It's so powerful. And I think we're at a point right now where not only do we desperately need that, we've become skeptical of anyone who positions themselves otherwise. You know, our bullshit meters are so finely attuned because we're on the receiving end of so much content and so many experts telling us how to live our lives and we should do this or that, that it's a breath of fresh air when we can see the humanity in somebody who perhaps can teach us something, but also lets us know that we're on this path together.
Yeah. I actually don't want to learn from somebody who presents himself as having like a just this easy, smooth trajectory to like mad success. I'm like, nah, like I want to learn from somebody who's been beaten, you know, knocked around on the way, not physically necessarily, but who's been through really hard times and figured out a way to continue on, even if they haven't risen to the highest level of success. That's the person I trust.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that in certain respects is why this podcasting format has blown up. Well, I think that we've become so acclimated to soundbite culture, but we're animals that love story, you know, and we are animals of nuance. And this format allows us to have the time, the bandwidth to explore things the way that they actually are, rather than just the 10-second version.
Yeah. No, that's my favorite part of it too. Mm-hmm. So you're hanging out on an island, you and Julie are having these awesome conversations, in part because you're creating some interesting stuff, you're being real, and because it's really early in the game, you're gaining traction on this audio thing. But still, you're not back.
No. No, so we lived on Kauai for 3 months before we came back to the mainland. And just to be clear, like I've continued to do the podcast now for 5.5 years, but it was, I don't know, 2.5 years of doing it consistently every week without ever missing a week before it got to the point where I could like, you know, make any money off of it. Yeah, it's like business. Did it for a long time for free. Yeah, we came back and then here we are. Well, we're back. Now what are we going to do? And it was really just, we strung it together somehow, like looking back, like, I don't even know how we made it work. You know, literally, hey, will you come and speak here for free? Will you come and do this one thing? We'll pay a tiny little bit of amount. Like I just said yes to everything. I said yes to the universe. You know, we were fighting for our house. We came within 48 hours of having it stripped away from us. At the very last minute, the bank came through and allowed us to refinance. Like every single real estate person said, the house is gone. Like you're not going to save this thing. Like we hadn't been able to pay our mortgage for a very long time. And by some mysterious alchemy of, you know, universal support, things came together that allowed us to save it and make it work. I got a business partner who was extremely helpful in taking my ideas and helping me figure out how to position them into ways that could be sustainable financially for the family. And then it was many years of just literally step by step, brick by brick, trying to build something that could ultimately provide for my family and pay the bills. And we're there now, but it took 4 or 5 years trying to put that together.
How were you frustrated by the feeling along the way that, I'm not even going to assume that, did you have a feeling along the way that there was something truly of value, something truly inside of you that you had push out into the world that could be of service, that could generate everything that you needed, where you could build a business, an income, a vocation around it. Mm-hmm. But you just couldn't put your finger on the pulse of what that looked like, the form and shape of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still struggle with how, you know, what that looks like. And it's not any one thing that I do. It's really the confluence of doing several things that allow it to work. All I knew was that a lot of people are suffering. There's a tremendous number of people who are sick. You know, it's like one out of every three people die of a heart attack. Diabetes rates are through the roof. Obesity rates are through the roof. Like I said before, people are stuck in jobs that are not fulfilling for them. And also becoming more and more aware of, because I'm so immersed in like food and food culture and food systems, the extent to which these choices that we all make every day about the food that we eat impact our planet and our environment in ways that we're not consciously aware of. And as I continue to interview more and more people for the podcast, my horizons began to expand and I became much more interested in issues that impact all of us than the world of ultra endurance sports or being a vegan athlete. And I knew that there was a way to take this information and provide it for people in a helpful way. But what that looked like in a business context really just kind of evolved organically through the process of just continuing to show up and create the best content that I could.
Got really dark in here, didn't it? You guys are listening, like, what just happened?
Some dark cloud. I don't know. God, did you not approve of what I just said?
I don't know. And lo, the heavens erupted. You're basically kind of like trying a whole bunch of different things and changing also, because this thing that vaulted you into the public was this physical transformation, vocational transformation, but not really vocational. It was the burned out, overweight, fit, sick, addicted to ultra endurance. That was the hero's journey that was being told publicly. That was a hero's journey that started the conversation with the public after that. But you're evolving to become much more interested and evolved in the world of food, but also sort of like the agricultural side of the food, the environmental side of the food, the sustainable side of food, which is interesting because to me, that's when I think about what you and Julie have now built, that is front and center. I sort of like, oh, and he does these really crazy things every once in a while runs these insane things and swims between 1,000 islands in frigid water. But to me, that's not the heart. That's not so much what it's about. Now, although if you look at the body of work you've created with your media now, which has now evolved into like much more polished, much more long, produced on a whole different level with, you know, like video, you do still sort of like blend, I wouldn't call them extreme athletes, but athletes who push themselves to the edge with people who are really full spectrum health, wellness, and a lot of food and environment.
Yeah, I try to mix it up. My only rule is, does this person have a message that I think is powerful? Does this person inspire me in a certain way? And I try to curate the guests, as I know you do, with a smattering of a little bit of everything. So yeah, I've had world-class athletes on, I've had entrepreneurs, I've had, you know, environmentalists, I've had all different kinds of people. And I try to, it's sort of like a playlist, right? Like if you're a DJ at a radio station, what song goes best after this song? So you create like this immersive experience as a result of consuming the content. But I think one of the things that I like to do on the podcast from time to time that maybe is a little bit different is I like to just have an everyman on, like somebody who maybe has done something noteworthy or extraordinary, but it's just like an average human being who faces the struggles that we all have and has found their own way of like navigating through that. And I found that some of those episodes are the most popular or the most impactful because we can see ourselves in those kinds of people. And sometimes when you have like a super world-class athlete on, it's hard to relate. You know, it's hard to really connect with that person.
Well, of course I can completely. You know. I relate to the everyman. It goes back to what you were saying before, though. It is like, you know, like, okay, so it's a belonging thing. It's like, oh yeah, me too, me too, me too. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
On the flip side of that, you have also had over the years guests that were highly provocative. Guests where you have.
Who, you? Who did
not,
I have?
No, not me. Recently, in the not too distant past, Lance Armstrong. So you've had a handful of people on that they're bigger names and they're extraordinarily polarizing characters. Mm-hmm. How do those experiences feel? Like how does that and how does that work for you? Because I know when you make a decision to have that person on and you say, okay, they have value, they have a story to tell. And I know there are a lot of people with eyes on them. And because as many people may be behind them, there are a whole lot of people who also wish them ill, wish them dead, like really hate these people. Yeah. How do you navigate saying yes to that person? And then how do you navigate the conversation that unfolds when that airs and sort of like hits the public domain?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I would say first and foremost that I'm not looking to be controversial. It's not my goal to be polarizing or, you know, to create some kind of clickbait controversy online. I'm interested in the humanity that unites us all. And with respect to Lance, you know, I know going into that, there are very few people that are as polarizing as that guy. People have very strong opinions of him on both sides of the equation. And I knew going into this podcast that no matter what I did, that wasn't going to change those people's minds. And I wasn't going into that interview to try to stir the pot either. My intention was to try to mine the humanity in this human being. And I was interested in exploring what it's like to pick up the pieces and move forward. He started this podcast. It's called The Forward, right? There aren't that many people who have flown to heights that guy has flown and then sunk to depths, you know, lower depths than he's had to face. And I wanted to know more about what that feels like. If you're that person who was once celebrated like almost no other human on earth and then becomes this pariah, but you have to continue to live your life.
And
what does that look like?
As a
kid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How do you do that? And to the extent that I succeeded or failed in trying to get to the bottom of that, the audience has to be the judge, but I certainly made the attempt. And, you know, he was reticent at first to do the podcast. And I just said, look, man, I'm not interested in taking sides. I'm not here to judge you. You know, I don't judge anybody's path, but the way that I can relate to a human being like that is that, you know, I've been in dark places. You know, I know what it's like to be a broken human being, and I know how difficult it is to face the prospect of trying to climb that mountain again. And I wanted to know about what it felt like for him to be that person. That's all. And in the wake of it coming out, of course, I knew, you know, I'm going to get attacked. I'm going to whatever. And that certainly occurred. But my choice was to not really engage in the dialogue around whether I should or should not have interviewed him. And I stand by the interview, you know, and you know, we were able to connect on some level over those issues. And I think that that has value. And again, it's up to the audience to decide that, not for me. Nah. But I do it again.
But I mean, it brings up another interesting thing, which I'm actually curious, because when you rise into some level of public recognition, and so part of what you you've built now over the years is, yes, you have a very successful media arm to the business that you're building. You have also, you work in some ways with your wife, with Julie, who is, you know, extraordinary at on the plant-powered side of things, and with recipe creation, and you've created beautiful cookbooks. How many were the original Plant Power Way, then the This Cheese Is Nuts, and then you've got the latest
new
one.
Yeah, we have a new one coming out, the Plant Power Way Italia, that comes out in April.
Right. So you're creating all this. Within all of this, you're offering a lot of value. You're also offering a very specific point of view. And just like on the podcast, you don't just ask questions. You are Rich Roll. You have a point of view. Your point of view is reflected in what you put into your books. It's reflected in the guests that you choose, who you say yes and no to, and the nature of the conversations that unfold. And again, some of those things are going to be received beautifully, maybe by most people. And at the same time, the more public you become, the stronger your voice, the stronger your point of view and your beliefs are, the more you're exposed to criticism. Mm-hmm. I know you just like as a friend, to be a gentle soul, to be sort of a kind, quieter guy. When that happens, and it always will, and as you reach, you know, again, as the profile rises, it gives you more opportunity for impact, but also more exposure. How do you just on a personal level move with that?
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure that out. I certainly don't come from a place of trying to be a provocateur. I do have a point of view, but I do my best in the podcast to be open to other people's ideas and to try to transcend my own dogmatic perspective on certain things that I'm, you know, hardwired to default to. And I don't, you know, I don't get involved in like debates over some of these issues. And I try to anchor my message in direct personal experience. And I try to avoid giving advice about how people should live their lives. I offer the perspective of my guests, and I'm happy to share my perspective and my experience with regard to issues that I do have experience with. And when it becomes polarizing for people, I guess my modus operandi is I don't really fight back. You know, if I get comments that say, blah, whatever they say, I allow people to have their perspective and their opinion. And I don't get dragged into the mud by that kind of stuff. And to the extent that that turns people off, I don't know. I don't know what the reaction to that is. But I would say that I don't get a lot of like hate online or anything like that. So I haven't really had to deal with it in a way that I know certain other people have.
Let's talk about you and Julie. So, you know, you've referenced her a number of times. We've talked about, she's gone through this whole thing with you. She is also a strong woman, bright, creative, fierce woman who is an entrepreneur as well. You know, like had a very strong career, you know, both in an industry and then on her own. And you guys have been navigating this together and working on and off in various different ways together. How has this whole journey over the last 5-6 years, what are the major sort of realizations or points of reckoning just in your personal relationship that stick with you, or just awakenings? Are there moments that stick out where you were both like, this is a moment. This is teaching us something about life, but also this is teaching us, like, we have to figure out how we're going to navigate this together.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, Julie and I are very different people in so many ways. We're hardwired very differently. She, like I said, has always been kind of my guiding force spiritually and a mentor to me in many ways about how to have a more mindful perspective on what's most important in life. But fundamentally, we share the same core values. And I think that one of the things that has been primary in our relationship is, as simple as it may sound, is coming to this understanding that we don't complete each other. We complement each other and we work really well together, but I don't need her to feel like a fully actualized human being. And she certainly doesn't need me to do that for herself, nor does she look to me for that purpose. And I've had to learn to not look to her for that purpose. That's the work that we need to do individually for ourselves. And then when we come together, we can have a spark and make magic. So we're independent in that regard, I think. We have, you know, we've been together 18 years and I still am wildly attracted to her and I love being married to her and she's just the coolest woman ever. Like I don't know how I lucked out and got her. And we've gone through it and had rough times like everybody who is married. But I think the success of our relationship comes from that sort of understanding of our own independence and respect for that. That's allowed us to weather through more difficult times. Like Julie will always say, like, I don't need you to sit next to me all the time. You know, you go and do your thing. I go do my thing and I trust you. I think there's a huge like reservoir of trust that we have between ourselves that allows us to express ourselves fully in our own little disciplines and then occasionally come together, like I said, to do things together. Because it's, you know, when you're married and you also work together, the challenges are like, where is the dividing line between what's work and what's your relationship? And that requires work in and of itself to understand that and make sure that you're protecting your personal relationship and the work doesn't just bleed into everything.
Yeah, no, that is the work when you work and, you know, with the person that you're with. Yeah. That's been our work also. And it's not easy, especially when what you do when you work together, you actually really love. It can easily consume
exactly.
All of your waking hours. Yeah. You're like, you have to have triggers that just say, okay, remember that other part of life that we like to?
Yeah, exactly.
when you think about sort of, you know, over 18 years, if you think back when you guys first met, what you were up to, what she was up to, and you think about where you are now, what you've been through, what you have, the gift of your family, your kids, a couple of dogs. Mm-hmm. Did you picture yourself a couple of decades out ever? And if so, did it look anything like this?
Nothing like this whatsoever. Nothing like this. I mean, I couldn't even imagine it. Not only because my life is an embarrassment of riches now, but because the shape that it's taken is so bizarrely different than anything I would have imagined for myself. Like a couple decades ago, I was in rehab. Like a couple of decades ago, there was nothing going on, you know? I was just trying to see if my parents would talk to me again. Like that, you know, my, you know, perspective was so limited to what was right in front of me to make it through to the next day. And then with a foundation of sobriety, I thought, I'm going to be a movie producer, or I'm going to be an entertainment lawyer. And I was very focused on trying to, you know, be this sort of big deal in Hollywood, which was a fool's errand for me. Like it was a square peg trying to jam into a round hole for far too long. The idea that I would be involved in wellness and be this athlete and like whatever, you know, have an occupation that is grounded in like content creation over the internet, like that, what, you know, like no. So it's not the function of a script or, like I said, some whiteboard plan. Like, it's honestly been more a function of being as present as possible, as often as possible, and then trying to mindfully respond to my instincts and how they matched or mismatched the cues that I was getting from my environment, and sort of adjusting accordingly with like micro decisions on a daily basis.
Hmm. Is there any map from this point forward?
You know, I'm not like the 5-year plan guy. Like, here's what I want to accomplish this year. I have ideas, but they're not as structured as they probably are for you. I could learn a lot from like how you forecast.
And I can learn a lot from just sort of like your willingness to sort of
I'm much
be with
more
the qualities
in the surrender
rather than
mode, goals. I suppose. Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that I want to do, you know, that I'm working on actively. But I don't have this like vision of like 5 years from now, this is what I want my life to look like. And I think perhaps in part that's a function of being really happy with what I'm doing right now. Like, I'm so grateful that I get to do that I get to sit here with you today and be in New York City and talk about things that are meaningful to me and meet cool people. And it's all a gift. And if the only thing that ever happened to me for the rest of my life is I get to like have a podcast, like, I'm cool with that. You know, I'm competitive and I have ambitions and the like, but I'm also very aware of, you know, the gift that I have right now. And so my kind of daily, you know, operating system isn't to necessarily look to grow what I'm doing as much as it is to improve the quality of what I'm already doing so that the people that are already attuned to my frequency are getting the most value out of what I produce.
Just letting that land. I really like that. It's sort of a mastery quest. It feels like a good place for us to come full circle also. So as we sit here in this container, in this conversation, Good Life Project, if I offer the term out to you, to live a good life, what comes up?
To live a good life. I should have seen this question coming. I thought about it on the way over here.
It's not like I end every single conversation with it.
To live a good life, I think, is to live a life that is grounded in both gratitude and service. The path to getting there will look different for everybody, but I think that the more open, willing and committed you are to trying to determine what that spark is inside of you that is yearning for expression, and the more you devote yourself to bringing life to that expression, that will guide you towards more purpose and fulfillment, and ultimately something worthy of giving. And to be able to do that with grace and with enough presence of mind to be grateful for that, I think, is what it means to live a good life. Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Hey, if you're still listening, thank you, thank you, thank you. I love that you've enjoyed this episode so much that you're still here. That's awesome. You are awesome. And while we're wrapping things up, might as well share a quick shout out to our really fantastic brand partners. If you dig this show, and I'm guessing you do because you're still here, please support them. They help make the podcast possible. Check out the links in today's show notes. Oh, and don't forget also, grab your spot at this year's Camp GLP. I will be there. Our amazing family will be there waiting to hug it out, to talk it out, to just really enjoy our time together. If you've been waiting, be sure to register soon and lock in your spot and get our final $100 discount. Visit goodlifeproject.com/camp today to learn more, or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.